Finally, I wanted to ask you about the Rutgers students calling for the university to support you, wanting Rutgers President William Tate to issue a statement, quote, resolution in support of Professor Mark Bray's academic freedom and free expression. This apparently is slated for consideration and vote Friday by the Rutgers University Senate. Your response, Professor Bray?
Well, I've received a tremendous amount of support from the Rutgers faculty, from the student body, and from the administration. I support that call. I hope it passes. I would very much appreciate a statement of direct support from President Tate. But, you know, to his credit, he did issue a statement in support of the free speech and academic freedom of all Rutgers faculty, which did not mention me directly, but I think implicitly supported my right to do my scholarship in accord with my job. But, you know, again, the Rutgers community has been fantastic, and especially given attacks on higher education across the country, the way that some subjects have been basically straight up banned in states like Florida, I'm happy to be a professor at Rutgers.
Mark Bray, Rutgers University history professor, author of Antifa, the Anti-Fascist Handbook. He's just moved his family to Spain after receiving death threats following President Trump's push to categorize the anti-fascist movement as a domestic terrorist organization. Coming up, we speak with a professor at Stanford University, Professor Emeritus, about what the deal that was made in Sharm el-Sheikh. And also about his own niece, who'd been held hostage by Hamas in Gaza for 54 days, her husband killed. This is Democracy Now!, back in 30 seconds.
Se quedan mudos, otros tienen memoria para olvidar. Si la violencia es un espejo que se rompe y nuestras lágrimas caídas gritarán.
Nunca más, never again, by La Santa Cecilia. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Pressure is growing in Israel to allow more aid into Gaza as the ceasefire continues to hold. On Tuesday, Israel told the United Nations it would allow only half the 600 daily aid trucks called for under the deal, accusing Hamas of moving too slowly to release the bodies of dead hostages. On Tuesday night, Hamas handed over four bodies. Israel said three of the bodies had been identified, but the fourth didn't match any of the known hostages. Meanwhile, Israel's returned the remains of 45 deceased Palestinians. Health officials in Gaza say the bodies arrived with their hands and legs cuffed. In a statement, Nasser Hospital said, quote, some are blindfolded. There are signs of gunshot wounds in some cases, while others have been run over by tanks, unquote. Israel's believed to hold hundreds of bodies of dead Palestinians. This comes as negotiations have begun for the second phase of President Trump's 20-point plan. On Tuesday, Trump threatened the U.S. would disarm Hamas if the group doesn't do so itself.
We have told them we want disarm, and they will disarm. And if they don't disarm, we will disarm them. And it'll happen quickly and perhaps violently. But they will disarm.
We're joined now by Joel Bainon, professor emeritus at Stanford University, non-resident fellow at Dawn. Joel Bainon has written or edited 12 books, among them A Critical Political Economy of the Modern Middle East. Professor Bainon's also the uncle of Liat Bainon Atzili, an Israeli hostage who was released after 54 days in Hamas captivity, her husband killed. Joel Bainon is in the new documentary on his niece that's titled Holding Liat. We will talk about that in a moment, Professor Benin. We'll talk about the incredible ordeal your family has been through. But first, I wanted to get your response to what has unfolded this week. The deal that has been signed, the 20-point Trump plan in Sharm el-Sheikh, the significance of this deal and what's happening on the ground, including the hostage release on both sides. You have the 20 hostages, live hostages, released by released by Hamas, and the nearly 2,000, some call them hostages, because so many of the Palestinian prisoners, almost all of Palestinians, if not all of the Palestinian prisoners that were taken from Gaza, have never been charged.
Good morning, Amy, and thank you for having me. The first phase of the deal, the ceasefire, the exchange of captives, which is still underway with regard to the deceased Israeli bodies that Hamas is still in the process of delivering, and the allowance of aid into the Gaza Strip, even though Israel has cut in half the original agreed-upon amount, these are all very welcome things. My family is very happy that the families of other hostages that have been returned dead and alive are reaching some degree of closure. All of the rest of the 20-point plan is very dubious, and I have grave doubts about whether any of the rest of it will actually be implemented.
What do you understand are the key issues of this deal? I mean, on the issue of the return of the dead bodies, I mean, obviously now in a completely demolished Gaza, I think President Trump referred to it as a kind of demolition zone that it's been demolished. They don't have DNA testing. And I think both sides recognized it was going to be hard for Hamas to identify some of these remains. And according to some reports, there were three bodies that are identified as Israeli hostages. The fourth, it's believed to be a Palestinian, but according to sources, not believed to be intentionally passed off, but not clear because it takes Israel testing the DNA.
That's right. Hamas has returned so far seven Israeli dead bodies. Subtracting the one that turned out not to be Israeli, four more are supposed to be delivered today. Haaretz reported some days ago that the Israeli government knows that as many as 15 hostages can't be located, that they understand that Hamas doesn't know where they are and Israel doesn't know what they are. So almost as many bodies that the Israeli government thinks can be positively located will have been returned by the end of today if Hamas carries through with returning four more bodies. Israel is playing with this as it has played with every issue, and this is a good indication of why we should have doubts about whether the rest of the 20-point deal will be carried out, because there is no majority in the Israeli government for a international stabilization force. I doubt very much whether Israel is going to be okay with soldiers from Muslim countries entering the Gaza Strip to ensure security. Israel is not going to be okay with the Palestinian Authority, whether it's reformed in whatever way they're supposed to be reformed. Nobody has actually specified what that is, that they should take control of Gaza. And the Israeli government is certainly not okay with any kind of move toward establishing a Palestinian state. And Hamas, for its side, has said that they are willing to give up their offensive arms, such as rocket launchers, and to withdraw from tunnels, which have been used for offensive actions. But they're not willing to give up their sidearms and their rifles. So there's going to be lots of points for disagreement. And as I said, very likely no agreement on the other points after what's originally been implemented so far.
One of the great fears of the Israeli hostage families until now has been if Israel, if Netanyahu continues his assault on Gaza, that the hostages would be killed in the bombing. And that issue of the possibility that, like so many thousands of Palestinians buried in the rubble, some of those Israeli hostages might have met the same fate and are buried in the rubble.
There's very good reason for that fear. About 41 hostages have been killed since October 7th as a result of military action. They've either been bombed by Israel, or in one very dramatic case, three of them were shot dead by Israel when they were trying to escape. Hamas has executed some of them when Hamas feared that Israeli forces were closing in on them. So it's almost certainly the case that had the fighting not stopped when it did, the lives of additional hostages would have been put at risk.
I want to go to the trailer for the feature documentary film Holding Liat. This is the documentary about your niece, your brother's daughter, Liat Benin Atsili.
Our intelligence says your daughter Liat is being held by terrorists in the Gaza Strip.
Wait.
It is so hard not knowing what's going on with her. My biggest worry is that she's not with us anymore.
We're being led by crazy people, whether it's on the Israeli side or whether on the Palestinian side. And the result is all this death and destruction.
Yehuda and I deal with problems differently.
The struggle for peace and reconciliation is the best way to respect Liat and Aviv and provide the human side to the story.
I'm not going to thank them for abducting my parents and murdering my acquaintances.
Let's just figure out where Liat and Aviv are. Let's just focus on that, Abba.
Supportive of the family, and on the other hand, I'm here and I disagree politically.
Sometimes it's better to just be quiet, because you know what? For getting Liat and Aviv back, put a yarmulke on your head.
No, I'm not going to run away. I'll stand my ground.
There's no way of knowing how much longer this is going to go on.
Who's holding her? Is she in a house? Is she in a cave? Is she being fed? Does she have her glasses? The longer it takes, the harder it is to stay positive.
There's no guarantee that either of them are cutting out of this alive.
We just got the list, and unfortunately, Liat is not on today's list.
That's the trailer for Holding Liat, which is available on BBC Storyville. This is another clip that features our guest, Joel Benin's niece, Liat Atsili. She was one of 16 hostages who were released from Hamas captivity in November 2023.
My thoughts about Israel's response and what's happening in Gaza are complex. It's horrible, truly horrible. People are saying we shouldn't let humanitarian aid into Gaza, and it's horrifying to hear. I don't care that it allows Hamas to keep fighting. People shouldn't starve to death, no matter who they are. But by the same token,
that's Liat.
It's not okay to go into people's houses and take them hostage either.
That's Liat Benin Atsili, our guest, Professor Joel Benin's niece. She was released in November of 2023 after 54 days in captivity. She's an Israeli-American citizen. Professor Benin, Holding Liat, this film is deeply moving. You're also in it, where you express your feelings, both the horror of the hostages being taken and the situation. And if you can talk about Liat and what happened and how you dealt with this through this time with your very critical view of Israel throughout the last decades of history.
So Liat is a history teacher. She lives on Kibbutz Neir Oz. Just recently, she's moved back in to a new house there. She was politically oppositional long before October 7th. My entire Israeli family, my family moved to Israel in 1973, all of them except for me. They were always left-wing Zionists, and that's the way I was brought up, too. I lived in Israel for several years before my family moved there in 1973 and came back because as a result of political struggle against the occupation and support of the Israeli Black Panthers, I came to abandon Zionism. So that's been a difference between my family and me for 50 years before October 7th. Nonetheless, I'm part of the family, and I was deeply shocked to learn that Liat was taken hostage on October 7th, along with 250 other Israelis. And the family found out 12 hours after Liat was released on November 29th, 2023, that her husband, Aviv, was killed defending their kibbutz on October 7th. So all of this was pretty traumatic for my family, pretty traumatic for all the people of Israel. And of course, Israel's response traumatized the entire population of the Gaza Strip 10 times over. The family has a certain amount of closure because we know what Liat is back. We know what happened to Aviv. There's been a funeral. But I don't think my family, I don't think many of the people of Israel, I don't think the great majority of the people of the Gaza Strip are going to recover from this trauma anytime soon. And since I am skeptical about how the 20-point deal will ever be implemented, I don't expect it to be, there won't be much help in resolving the trauma from the political leadership of either Israel or the Palestinians.
I wanted to end by asking you about the Palestinian prisoners, you might say hostages, who've been released up to 2,000. And I referenced this before. It is believed all, if not almost all, of those that were released to Gaza have never been charged and held for up to 2 years. When you saw the buses, both in Ramallah and Gaza, of the people coming off those buses, they were emaciated. They're wearing heavy sweatshirts that cover some of that. Some of them clearly beat up. Some of them can't walk. Your final comments on that, even as your niece was also held hostage.
So the Palestinians that have been released so far are in two categories, 1,700 and some captives who were held hostage without charge from Gaza. There are 9,000 more Palestinians in Israeli prisons, most of them held without charge. 250 of the Palestinians who were released were serving life sentences for armed attacks on Israelis. So it is the world media focuses on the Israelis. There's always a serious imbalance in coverage and centering Israel and Israelis and much less attention to Palestinians. But of course, Palestinian society as a whole is suffering far, far more than Israeli society has ever suffered as a result of the armed clashes going back all the way to 1948. And that's something that we in the West don't tend to have adequate appreciation for.
Professor Joel Bainin, I want to thank you for being with us, Professor Emeritus at Stanford University, now non-resident fellow at Dawn. Professor Bainin's niece, Liat Bainin Atsili, was held by Hamas for 54 days in 2023. There's a documentary now out on her titled Holding Liat. Coming up, we speak with Lindsay Boylan. She became the first of 11 women to publicly accuse her boss, then New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, of sexual harassment. She's now supporting Zoran Mamdani for mayor over Cuomo. Back in 20 seconds.
I landed here from Punjab. Kuli pukarda jagsanu. No real home but inkilab. Inkilab.
Singh in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Ahead of the highly watched November 4th New York mayoral race, in which the Democratic nominee Zoran Mamdani campaign will face off with disgraced former Governor Andrew Cuomo, Mamdani addressed a massive rally Monday night.
There is something special in this room tonight. It's power. Yeah. It's the power of hundreds of thousands of New Yorkers united, right, ready to usher in a new day. It is the power of a movement that won the battle over the soul of the Democratic Party, that put Andrew Cuomo's vision of austerity and smallness firmly where it belongs on a ballot line no one's ever heard of.
Zoran Mamdani, a Democratic Socialist Assembly member, shocked the political establishment throughout the United States when he defeated Andrew Cuomo in the Democratic mayoral primary in June. Cuomo is now running as an independent. Andrew Cuomo resigned as governor in 2021 after New York Attorney General Letitia James released a damning report finding he sexually harassed at least 11 women. During an interview on The View last week, Sarah Haynes asked Cuomo about his sexual harassment scandal.
What do you say to voters who have a hard time looking past this?
Yeah, it's a good question. When the report was issued, I said I believed it was politically motivated, and it was. I didn't even know the allegations at that time. Nothing came from those allegations. It was a very painful period for me and for my family. I did say, if I offended anyone in any way, I didn't mean it. And I learned a lesson, a painful lesson, which is to be much more cautious.
For more, we're joined by Lindsay Boylan. She served as a senior aide to Governor Cuomo from 2015 to 2018. In 2021, she became the first of 11 women to publicly accuse Cuomo of sexual harassment, setting in motion events that would lead to his fall from power. After Cuomo announced he's running for mayor, after having resigned as governor, Vanity Fair ran a piece by Boylan, headlined Andrew Cuomo for Mayor. His first accuser says New York City deserves better. And after Cuomo lost the primary, Lindsay Boylan published an article in The Independent headlined, "We Will Beat These Monsters." Welcome to Democracy Now! Can you respond to what Governor Cuomo said on The View?
I mean, it's a complete lie. Three investigations found he did these things. Three women decided to pursue him in civil court. Two have settled with the state for an upwards of almost $1 million. A third will go to trial. And this man resigned. He resigned because he did these things. There was no way to continue. And people powerful within his own party forced that resignation because they knew he did these things. So he's lying again.
So I'm asking you to remind us what you did when you came forward, the first of 11 women to come forward, because there's so little that is repeated about this during this race.
Thank you. And we have to repeat it because people have to know what abuser he is. I first tweeted about it because a young woman had reached out to me explaining she was sexually harassed, Charlotte Bennett. And then his name was being floated for potential attorney general, highest lawmaker in the land. And so I started tweeting saying he sexually harassed me. I was quickly smeared by him and his aides. And then I got my ducks in a row and put together all the evidence, all the details I had for a Medium piece that would ultimately spur other women to come forward and tell their stories and initiate an investigation. So, you know, we haven't backed down for one moment, even as he's continued his abuse in the courtroom with taxpayer dollars.
And the significance of now New York City Mayor Eric Adams pulling out of the mayoral race. Already, Curtis Sliwa, the Republican candidate, said he was being offered a fortune to pull out, but he's refused to. Who are the supporters of Cuomo? And again, you are publicly supporting now Zohran Mamdani, yes. Which is very interesting because you're the economic advisor to Cuomo. Yeah. And if you can talk about the political establishment that you were very much a part of until you accused him of sexual harassment.
Yeah. I mean, I've always been focused on jobs for New Yorkers, and that was kind of my job working for the state is how do we bring more economic development, business, and jobs to New York? And I have to say, I was at the Crane's Business Breakfast, and Zohran did a tremendous job explaining that affordability is a key issue for attracting business talent to the city. How can you ask employees to live here if they can't afford to do it? So he answered those questions well. And my values have always been about helping New York. And that's what he's doing.
I want to go back to Zohran Mamdani. In an exchange from the last New York City mayoral primary debate before Mamdani won it, this is between Mamdani and Andrew Cuomo.
To put a person in this seat at that at this time with no experience is reckless and dangerous. To Mr. Lander and his experience, remember, this was the fiscal watchdog under the Eric Adams administration, which was like the bookkeeper at Tammany Hall.
Yeah. Mr. Mamdani, to Mr. Cuomo, I have never had to resign in disgrace. I have never cut Medicaid. I have never stolen hundreds of millions of dollars from the MTA. I have never hounded the 13 women who credibly accused me of sexual harassment. I have never sued for their gynecological records. And I have never done those things because I am not you, Mr. Cuomo. And furthermore, the name is Mamdani. M-A-M-D-A-N-I. You should learn how to say it because we got to get it right.
So that's Zohran Mamdani and Andrew Cuomo when they were in the mayoral primary. Mamdani won, trounced Cuomo, and now they're running in the general race that'll take place on November 4th, early voting already starting soon. So if you can talk about from sexual harassment, the charges of 11 women, including you, to what's happening now at the national level. You have House Speaker Johnson refusing to seat Adelita Grijalva, Arizona Congressmember-elect, because she would be the 218th sign on it to a discharge petition to release the Epstein files. What's the relationship you see between the two?
People who abuse women abuse every kind of power they have. And in all of this is trying to lie about the truth. Mike Johnson is trying to pretend as if he's doing anything but cover for Donald Trump. Supposedly in his campaign, Donald Trump was going to release the files. Lo and behold, he's learned more. And he will do anything to avoid accountability and truth-telling. And I think that's the very same thing with Andrew Cuomo. And you asked earlier, who are his supporters? They're the very same supporters as Donald Trump supporters. They have the same donor base. They have the same people in their ears, same pollsters going to the White House saying you should support Andrew Cuomo. It's been well documented, and that's because these people value their power above all else.
And Lindsay Boylan, former senior aide to the disgraced former New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, who was forced to resign over charges of sexual harassment, now running for mayor of New York City. Boylan was the first of the 11 women to publicly accuse Cuomo of sexual harassment. That does it for our show. Juan Gonzalez will be speaking at Delaware Technical Community College in Georgetown, Delaware, tonight at 6 and tomorrow at 6 at the Delaware History Museum in Wilmington. I'll be speaking in Santa Fe after the showing of the film Steal the Story, Please at the Lensic Theater on Friday night, October 17th. I'm Amy Goodman. This is Democracy Now!
Ich bin Arndt Peltner von Radio Goethe. Ihr hört Mike mit Noise of Corporate right here on CJSF 90.1 FM and CJSF.ca. Hello, this is Arndt Peltner, host of Radio Goethe. You're listening to Mike and his Noise of Corporate, celebrating the indie noises of the 90s on CJSF 90.1 FM and CJSF.ca.
Okay, das habe ich verstanden. CJ.